Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
The News Run on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hello there. You are welcome along. So the never-ending soap opera continues. Henry Shefflin is the new Galway senior hurling manager. This news broke just in the past 2 hours or so. We have Cyril Farrell and Shefflin's former teammate Eddie Brennan with us at 7:30. There is Wednesday night rugby after 8 this evening. Andy Farrell has named his squad for the November internationals. Keith Wood and Fiona Hayes coming your way. The GAA president, Larry McCarthy, meanwhile, has nailed his colours to the mast. The message is be bold, vote for Proposal B. His interview with Owen Sheehan is on the way. And it's another Champions League evening in store. Manchester United at home to Atalanta. Chelsea have Malmo. Bayern against Benfica. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Director General Tom Ryan, by the way, also supporting Proposal B. We'll hear from Larry McCarthy just after 8:30. Richie McCormack is with us. Hello.
Joe, I think I speak for all of the OTB Sports digital team when I say there is too much news today.
Oh my
literally
goodness.
You haven't even mentioned Steve Bruce, for God's sake.
Steve Bruce, I mean, I would have thought that was yesterday at this rate. That's what kind of day it's been. Most importantly, Kenny Cunningham has made a return to studio, everyone, for a Champions League evening. Kenny Cunningham, hello.
Evening, Joe. All right, Rich.
I miss you, Ken.
Oh, hollow.
that's
the
harsh.
First word that springs to mind.
That's harsh. The first thing I said.
You know,
start it again.
You know, Kenny's back because there's mad things happening with the headphones and the. I don't know what's going on. You can't seem to crack that, can you? Microphones
can't.
And
no, I can't.
Yeah, deafening the listeners. Like there's dogs outside dying.
Do you know what, Joe? It seems to be all right. He never has a problem with it when he's on with the other lot, does he?
I don't know.
Oh, it's like that now. It's us and them, is it? I thought you're one happy family in this place.
You're the one who accused me of being hollow, Kenneth.
Have you cut them loose, the breakfast mob?
The who?
Really? Fair enough. At least I know. I've got to make a decision. I've got to jump one way or the other.
No, you're all right. I think you're of such a stature. You can do what you want. Either one. We're both desperate enough to take you.
Yeah.
No, you can pick. So look, lots going on. We'll get to Steve Bruce, of course. We will get to Henry Shefflin. For instance, Manchester United team news is in. They play Atalanta this evening. Kenny, curious for your thoughts on all of this. David De Gea is in goal. Juan Bissaka, he was suspended for the last game, is back in it right back. It's Lindelof and Maguire and Luke Shaw. Who would be the midfield two, we wondered in advance of this game. It's McTominay and Fred. Paul Pogba is on the bench this evening. Mason Greenwood on the right-hand side. Bruno Fernandes through the middle. Marcus Rashford on the left-hand side. And of course, Cristiano Ronaldo plays up front for Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, after the Leicester defeat, said maybe the balance was off in this team. Now, I interpreted that as one of Pogba or Ronaldo is going, and it would be a brave man to not have Ronaldo in that starting 11. So, Paul, we need to have a chat. What do you make of this team?
Yeah, I think it was pretty predictable, to be honest with you, off the back of the performance and result the weekend. Yeah, so I was thinking it was obvious those two kind of holding midfielders were going to come back into the team. So I don't know if Matic on the bench tonight, potentially he could have been one of those two. But I think the interesting thing is, I mean, he's had a bit of success with the two lads there, kind of as, you know, two holders, giving a bit of a defensive security, a bit of a defensive blanket to the centre-halves behind them. But really, the more I've looked at those two players over the past kind of year, 18 months, I've tried to convince myself that potentially either McTominay or Fred, you can kind of trust at least one of them in that kind of defensive midfield area. But I just can't. It's come to a point now where even both of them operating in there as a pair, Joe, I'd still be a little bit nervous from a defensive point of view. Yeah, because I look at McTominay and I actually like McTominay, but I think for me he's a box-to-box player. He's at his best when he's got a bit of a licence. He's off the leash. He can actually arrive late into the box, those kind of toward man runs. I actually think he's got quite a few goals in him if he had that particular role. That's not the role he's going to be playing tonight. And Fred, again, for me, he's probably one of the few players I struggle to actually pigeonhole in terms of what type of midfield that he is. Generally, you can say, look, he's a number six, he's a sitter, he's got certain defensive attributes, you can trust him, or he's more of a ball-playing technical player, or somebody who arrives late into the box from central midfield, as we've spoken about with McTominay. But with Fred, I just don't know. I certainly don't think he's got those natural defensive instincts that you'd hope for in a player on that area of the pitch. And I think a couple of games this season we've seen them already. He's just looks a little bit too blinkered for me, Joe, when he's on the pitch, just kind of following the ball and just really seeing what's in front of him a lot of the time, when really those, you know, the better centre midfield players, you know, take a step back, they survey their surroundings and they adjust their positions and kind of dominate that area of the pitch sometimes without actually controlling the ball, you know, just position themselves in certain areas of the pitch, anticipating danger, anticipating runs and kind of dealing with things in that area of the pitch. And Fred's never done that for me either. So, yeah, pretty obvious. No surprise that they're both in there, but almost a little bit disheartening. Pretty predictable, but a little bit disheartening in some other respects, because it's kind of a step, it's a step backwards to an extent, where really I feel as if United need to take a big step forward in terms of being able to join those top three teams who are above them in the league.
So what could Solskjaer do? What team could he pick this evening where you would think, progress, I like that?
No, it's a difficult one, because he's short in that central midfield there, and he's got to take responsibility for that. He hasn't reinforced that central area of the pitch. He hasn't brought in that top class holding midfielder, and there's no way around it now. The window's shut, so he's just going to have to limp along to a certain extent. You just got to suck it up. I'd still take your best. I'd still take a punt on your one best holding midfielder, whoever that is, whether it's Matic, whether it's Fred or McTominay. Trust him to hold the centre of the park, and I'd still pick your two best attacking centre midfielders, your two best number eights. Now, for a long time, Pogba would have been one of those, potentially Fernandes as well. I look at Lingard, to be fair. He wouldn't be too much chit-chat about Jesse Lingard in terms of who's got to come into the team. A lot of the talk would be Sancho, Rashford, etc., and Greenwood. I mean, I like what he's done tonight. At least he's kept a bit of natural width in the team with Greenwood and Rashford. What would have been worse tonight if he'd have dropped one of them and thrown Pogba onto the flanks, which he's done occasionally well. And that throws out the equilibrium even more so when you push Paul Pogba into a kind of wide midfield position, getting nothing out of male possession as well. So at least there's a bit of cohesion there with that front three, Joe. But me, I'd still go with that holding six. Take your pick. None of them for me is good enough for the reasons that I've mentioned already. But at least allows you to get those two attacking number eights into the team, whether it's Pogba, Bruno, or whether even it's Lingard. Van de Beek doesn't even come into the discussion, unfortunately, these days, and probably won't.
Gavin's texted into 53106. Kenny, I'll tell you what type of midfielder Fred is. A crap one. That was predictable. Oh, Kenny, how I've missed thee, says Pat. It's pipe and slippers time. I'm going to enjoy tonight's show, lads. See, you've got Pat there by the wireless. Hang on. Loving your work.
Yeah, but I haven't said much. There's not really much to say, to be honest with you, around this Manchester United team, is there? And it's a shame, really, because it's forced them with talent.
There's a lot,
isn't it?
There's a lot to say around Solskjaer's position with one win in five. This is a very interesting period coming up now for him, not least with the game on Sunday as well. So let's see. Let's see how tonight goes. We will come back and talk more about United in a moment. But Richie, you're waiting patiently there. We should start the news round.
God, jump in, Rich. You know that. Don't be waiting for me to take a breath.
Yeah. With thanks to Gillette, put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. And the news round, of course, is starting with the news that Davy Fitzgerald. Wait, what? Henry Shefflin? Yeah. That was kind of how the afternoon went.
A bit mad. Yeah, Henry Shefflin now seems to be the man who's going to be named the next Galway senior hurling manager. The Kilkenny legend has pipped Davy Fitzgerald to a position left vacant by Shane O'Neill last month. The Galway job will be Shefflin's first in inter-county management. He's previously, of course, led Ballyhale Shamrocks to an All-Ireland club title and was most recently in charge of Kilkenny intermediate side Thomastown.
It is extraordinary. I don't remember. I mean, nobody saw this coming. It seemed last night, Richie, like it was Davy Fitz.
Yeah, Claire Echo had gone pretty heavy on this one, saying, and you would trust their links, I suppose, to Davy to know what way the wind is blowing, so much so that his entire backroom team was out there, Louis Mulqueen among them, who previously worked under Gerlach Nann in Galway. I don't think at any point during the conversation since Shane O'Neill stepped down that Shefflin's name was mentioned once. Like, the likes of Micheál Donoghue, of course, dropped out of the running pretty early on. He was a strong candidate if he didn't even make the interview process. Geoffrey Linsky was another who was in there, who it seems was another, you know, viable option to succeed Shane O'Neill. Shefflin's name, I just can't remember popping up at all. And for him to be 11th hour when we thought, like, I literally was prepping a piece to say David Fitzgerald has been named Galway manager, for it to come out of nowhere and now be Shefflin, is a bit of a bow from the blue. It's an exciting jolt, I think you'd say, to the All-Ireland Hurling Championship and the landscape for next year, because it adds an extra bit of, what the French might call, I don't know what, because like we literally don't know what kind of an inter-county manager Shefflin is going to be. There's a huge job in terms of refreshing that squad, I guess you'd say, and especially trying to possibly make up for Joe Canning walking away. He might come back, who knows. But yeah, there's a huge job ahead of him.
Well, I'd say for starters, Joe Canning is thinking. I would think he's wondering. So we'll talk to Eddie Brennan, who can tell us a bit more about what he thinks Shefflin's going to bring to the party. And then Cyril Farrell's going to join us as well as somebody who will have a real feel for what talent might be available to Shefflin. We are obviously talking about maybe the greatest hurler in the history of the game. 16-year career, 10 All-Irelands, 11 All-Stars, 3 times Hurler of the Year. We're hearing a 3-year term review at the end of year two, review at the end of year two. And thus far with Ballyhale, I mean, to say it's been impressive is an understatement. He took over Ballyhale in 2017, won the Kilkenny Championship, the Leinster Championship, and then All-Ireland Championship across 18-19, and then repeated the trick the following year, and then walked off into the sunset unbeaten after 17 matches. So, thus far, it's pretty promising, Henry Shefflin. So, we'll talk to Eddie Brennan and Cyril Farrell around 7:30. Now, we were wondering, Richie, would the GA hierarchy come out and nail their colours to the mast? They have done so.
Yeah, they have indeed, and it follows a wave of counties over the course of the last 24 hours voting, or not indeed voting, but saying they will vote for Proposal B at a Saturday special congress. Cork, Meath, Clare, Tipperary and Roscommon among them. The President and Director General of the GAA have both given their backing as well to Proposal B. Larry McCarthy and Tom Ryan both addressed the media today ahead of Saturday's vote at Croke Park. McCarthy says the association should be bold in their approach to the Football Championship, while Ryan has dismissed concerns related to finance.
But it's fair to say that The differences are pretty inconsequential. The margins between them are sufficiently small to say that, look, we could be wrong, and it could well be that the one that we think is less favourable turns out to be more favourable. That will depend on, as it does any year, what particular couple of teams end up facing off against each other at a particular stage of the championship and stuff like that. So very deliberately, you know, we looked at the finances. We concluded it's not a financial decision. It wouldn't be anyway. But the first thing is to look at what shape you want the championship to look like next year. Whatever hand is dealt to us by Congress, we'll make the best of that we can. It's not a financial decision, and we weren't putting financial numbers to the forefront of the decision-making process. If, to be honest, if it was a case that one was hugely more beneficial than the other, we would have a responsibility to do that. But given the marginal difference between them, it's not something that we intend making an issue of, and it's not something that, to be honest, anybody should cast a vote based on a financial outcome.
So that's Tom Ryan. We're going to hear Larry McCarthy, the president, chatting to Eoin Sheehan in the next hour of the show. Lots of people in touch to say nice to have Kenny back on the radio. Lads, for me, Ronaldo's the problem. It's becoming more and more obvious week on week, says Tommy. I would share that view a little bit increasingly, I have to say. It's interesting, Kenny. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was asked about that in the press conference in advance of this Atalanta game last night. You know, the Ronaldo thing, how well is it working? How hard is he working? All that kind of stuff. Here's what Solskjaer said.
You know, we got 11 players out there on the pitch. We've got different roles and responsibilities, and we put a team out there that we really think is going to win that game. We didn't win against Leicester, so there's always going to be criticism. And Cristiano is a absolute top player, and we know what he can do for us, and he's doing everything he can do to help the team.
But is it good enough? United without the ball are soft at the moment. Ronaldo's got to be a massive part of that problem.
Yeah, but that was expected, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and we haven't seen anything that we
no.
that nobody envisaged. Yeah, you know, when Ronaldo signed, what do you think? Well, goals. He's gonna get his goals. Absolutely. What about his work rate? Oh well, yeah. Well, obviously we're not gonna get. So it's panned out exactly as you thought. So it's just a balance. And that was fair what he said. I mean, I suppose, and this is the not so much. Well, it is a problem which he has, Solskjaer, in terms of keeping Ronaldo in the team and providing that kind of counterbalance. What are you going to lose from Ronaldo in terms he's not going to exert too much energy out possession of the ball? And that's a problem in terms of, particularly if you're looking to press high up the pitch, as generally a fair proportion of teams do. If your pivot high up the pitch isn't going to start that press or isn't going to contribute to the kind of collective press high up the pitch, well, it's going to fall apart. So then you have to find almost another solution. You almost got it for me. You got to take a step back. You got to hold a kind of lower defensive block almost and break out from a deeper defensive position. Now, Ronaldo necessarily isn't going to take you up the pitch 40, 50 yards top speed and run away from people. So again, you've got to find a bit of pace around, which they have tonight in Greenwood and Rashford. So yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah. But that was always going to be the case, Joe, wasn't it? He's kind of boxed himself in a little bit in terms of the Ronaldo son. And like I said, it wasn't on the cards, was it?
Not until Rio got involved.
Yeah, but I could understand it. It's too easy now to say, oh, what was he thinking of bringing Ronaldo? We know what he was thinking, and we've seen evidence of it already in terms of the quality of his finishing, particularly the previous Champions League game, his winning goal against Villarreal. But yeah, it's going to be an issue for them going forward in terms of the defensive setup of the team, because it's just as important. People forget, you know, look at the attacking quality on the team, but the most successful teams, of course, have the happy balance between offering that attacking threat and a real kind of defensive solidity as well.
Yeah. So, Richie, Simon Zeebo, welcome back.
Yeah, he's set to win his first Ireland cap in more than 4 years. He's been included in Andy Farrell's squad for next month's Autumn Internationals. Remember, Zeebo wasn't included in a 50-strong panel that trained ahead of these Autumn Internationals. Farrell's also picked uncapped Leinster pair Kieran Frawley and Dan Sheehan for the games with Japan, the All Blacks and Argentina. Munster's Thomas Ahern and Leinster's Jamie Osborne will join the panel as development players.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Keith Wood and Fiona Hayes after 8 o'clock on Wednesday Night Rugby. So to the Champions League, we've obviously touched on the game at Old Trafford. There are other games.
Yeah, Group S are the game tonight, seeing Young Boys playing hosts to Villarreal. In Group H tonight, Chelsea welcome Malmo to Stamford Bridge. Before that game, Thomas Tuchel had said that Romelu Lukaku was physically and mentally drained. But of course, he starts tonight up front against Malmo. Zenit St. Petersburg taking on Juventus in that group's other game. In Barcelona's crucial Group E game at the Camp Nou, they lead Dinamo Kiev by a 0-0. Gerard Piqué with it. And there's 30 minutes to play in Barcelona. Elsewhere tonight in that group, Bayern Munich are away to Benfica. In Group G's early start, Salzburg have just taken a 3-1 lead at home to Wolfsburg. And at 8 tonight, French champions Lille entertain Sevilla. Patson Daka scored 4 times as Leicester won a Europa League thriller in Moscow today. Brendan Rodgers' side 4-3 victors away to Spartak to collect their first win in Group C. And St. Pat's are out of the UEFA Youth League. They lost 2-0 away to Red Star Belgrade this evening and exit the competition 4-1 on aggregate.
Needless to say, Barcelona could do with the 70-80 million you get from making it out of your group in the Champions League with their 1.5 billion in debts. So a 1-0 win this evening would give them a chance. 3 minutes to go in that game. On the Tuchel point on Lukaku, Kenny, what are you seeing from Lukaku of late? Does he look tired to you?
No, I wouldn't say kind of a massive drop off, but it can be kind of subtle a little bit with players in terms of that kind of physical and mental drop off. You just notice maybe just a little bit of kind of touch, rushing a few things, decision making. So the manager might get a sense of that. I can understand that he's played a huge amount of football the last couple of years. Italy hardly remember being injured like for any significant amount of time at Inter Milan prior to him signing for Chelsea. And then there's obviously a constant run of games during the summer. The Euros, League of Nations was mentioned as well. He's just, you know, continually been on the treadmill. And affects players a little bit differently. So, yeah, I wouldn't surprise me a slight little drop-off. And it's down to the manager then to call it in terms of where he feels if he's got to take him out for a couple of weeks, or, you know, just some players who just kind of play through it. Actually play their way through it, mentally get themselves in a better place. A couple of goals, I think, will help. It's always the case, generally, this bit of tiredness and talk of he's a little bit shot, rears his head when generally, you know, hasn't scored too many goals in an extended period of time. Once he rattles back-to-back goals, in your sense, next couple of games, suddenly that kind of discussion will disappear.
And did you find, if you were tired, scoring a hat-trick helped you along?
I was permanently tired. I was tired for 18 years in my professional career.
Richie, Steve Bruce lasted just the 13 days, probably about 12 more than we might have thought, but he's lasted 13.
Yeah, sacked as Newcastle manager. Today's final game in charge was Sunday's 3-2 defeat at home to Tottenham, his 1,000th in club management. That game was also the first under the club's new owners, who offered their gratitude to the Magpies manager of 2 years. Graham Jones takes interim charge ahead of Saturday's trip to Crystal Palace. In an interview with The Telegraph following his sacking, Bruce said the job would likely be his last following the toll it took on him and his family. Newcastle have also asked fans not to wear traditional Arabic clothing or Middle East-inspired head coverings to matches. That's unless they'd usually wear them. The club's new owners say none of them were offended, but that it risks causing offence to others.
Yeah, busy day at Newcastle. So Steve Bruce walks off with 7 million. And if you're thinking to yourself, how the hell did Steve Bruce get a deal with Mike Ashley where he would get 7 million if he was sacked? It was, you get 7 million in the event of being sacked after a takeover. So that was like a little parting gift from Ashley to the new owners there. So I guess, look, 7 million softens the pain. I know, I don't think you and Bruce were in love with each other when he was your manager from memory. Maybe I have that wrong, but...
No, I think you got... No,
you were okay?
No, with a fair relationship.
Okay. It's interesting he's saying, look, that's probably my last job now. He was talking to the Telegraph and he was just saying the abuse has gone up and up and up and up, you know, across his experience, 1,000 games as manager. He's just saying, I think I'm done with it now. It's just more hassle than it's worth, was kind of an interesting comment.
Yeah. Well, that's the job, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't deal with it. Get out. That was as simple as that.
Well, he's getting out. He'd be all right with the few quid, I'd say. He'd manage it till Christmas anyway.
Oh, he'd plenty of
some chippy tea over there.
Yeah, yeah. Plenty of money in the bank, yeah, I would suspect, prior to that. Like, but I wouldn't rule him out with a job maybe 6 to 12 months. Generally, they jump back on the carousel, don't they? So,
What do you make of the logic of sacking him and then having caretaker come in? Would there not be sense in saying, well, Bruce, you've lots of experience, you've a relationship with some of the players, why don't you continue on until we're ready to replace you? Like, why is Graeme Jones in there, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that was a strong argument. If they hadn't got somebody particularly lined up to come in, I think that would be the more sensible approach. He understands the players, the dressing room. You would imagine he's a reasonable relationship with the majority of players, the experience that he has in the league, etc., you know, kind of a calm and influence. But I must admit, I haven't been. I watched a little bit of the interview that he gave just prior to the Tottenham game, was it? And woof, that was kind of a car crash. I mean, if I was the new owners of a football club, I think the decision would have been made then, because you're expecting your manager there to come in. I know there's. I didn't know there was any criticism of the manager following the takeover. I hadn't noticed any particular personal criticism directed towards Steve Bruce. If anything, it was a little bit of sympathy around the place in terms of, oh, he's in a difficult position, he's probably going to lose his job. Shame that, but there you go. That's the way of the world. So I think if I was the owners of Newcastle Football Club, I would have expected the manager in the circumstance, and it's a pressurised environment, I understand that, and he would have known the reality of the situation. Potentially, he would have been heading out the door at some point, whether it's 6 months or the year. So I think there was a lot of eyes on him from the new owners. I think from the players as well, a lot of uncertainty in the dressing room. Ooh, what's going to happen here? New takeover, new manager. Is he staying? Is he going? So I think then everybody's looking at you. The whole football club are really looking at you. So that was his opportunity to come into that press conference and really bowl everybody over. You know, push his shoulders back and say, look, yeah, I understand the reality of the situation, but do you know what? I'm looking forward to the challenge. I'm backing me players. I'm backing myself. I think we got a great spirit here. I'm going to prove to the new owners that actually I'm the man for the job. Mm. You know, that kind of confident air. But the little bit that I saw, it was the opposite. You know, it got a little bit spiteful. There was a couple of arguments of sorts and a little bit to and fro with a couple of the journalists. And it struck me as a little bit of a self-pity one, to be honest with you. That's what was coming across. So for me, if I was the new owners and I was looking at that, I'd be thinking, well, I can't trust this fella in the dressing room to be that kind of calm and influence to kind of pull the whole football club together, even if it's only for the short term, to say to everybody, look, rowing behind me, I'm going to keep us safe, I'm going to keep us in the right direction, at least for the short to medium term. Mm. So I think that was it for me. As soon as I heard that, I thought, oh, that's not good.
I'll read you the quotes later on in the football show that he gave to the Telegraph, where he talked about the abuse and how much it's got in on him, and how even when things were going well and results were good, he couldn't win over the fans. The interview read of someone who's just beaten down by the whole thing and was happy enough to get out of there. So maybe they sensed that as well. So, Richie, the IRFU, well, they've been busy today. Obviously, squad announcement. There's all sorts of reviews and independent reports into various aspects of the women's game.
Yeah, the IRFU CEO Philip Brown today apologised for Connacht and Ulster women being forced to change next to bins at Energy Park last month. He was speaking after a report was released into the reasons behind that incident. The report found an ambiguity as to the responsibility for the organisation of the final weekend of fixtures for the series in the Interpro was behind it. The association has also opened a wide-ranging review into the women's game in the country, which includes an examination of Ireland's failure to qualify for next year's World Cup finals in New Zealand.
Dec Mooney on Twitter. Davey wasn't the answer for Galway. Shefflin was. Right age profile, pedigree as a coach and player, unbelievable. In fairness to Davey, this would have been his 15th year running as an intercounty manager, and I think he's done all right. I think he has proven himself, but I do take the point. Shefflin's exciting prospect right now. Kieran in Tip says, Kenny knows the score surrounding holding midfielders. He soldiered with five of the best at Wimbledon in Jones, Leonardson, Earl, Ardley, Ewell. Those names ring a bell, Kenny, wonders Kieran and Tip.
I thought he was going to reference Ireland. I think that would probably be a better analogy.
Who are your Ireland midfielders?
Well, Roy obviously.
Then
the likes, but then Mark Kinsler, Matty Holland, Lee Carsley, all of those players I've mentioned there, that kind of defensive mindset that I'm talking about, they all had it. Mm. All understood their role, screen you, help you out, protect you for the whole course, you know, really good game understanding in terms of where they needed to be out of possession of football.
Possibly, fellas, we all underrated because Roy's star was burning so bright.
Yeah, maybe so. Roy dominated for obvious reasons, but they just they all slotted in alongside him perfectly. They all did on occasion, didn't they? Mark, Matt,
yeah.
Lee. Like, Lee struggled probably to get enough game time. Lee was a fantastic, real competitor in that area of the pitch. So, and it does, as a centre-half, don't half make your job a lot easier, Joe. Really doesn't, because, you know, you don't have to worry. Generally, you don't have to worry about the space in front of you, because good centre midfielders, they close the space, they cut off the passing lanes into the centre forward, and it means almost what I used to be able to do is take another step backwards towards my own goal, because I knew at times I don't have to worry about that ball into feet because they can't get it in there, because they're two centre midfielders. The screen is that good.
Yes.
All I have to worry about now is that ball over the top, and I can actually cheat a little bit and give myself an extra yard, which invariably I needed.
Maybe an extra two.
And the rest. Yeah, but exactly. But that's what these central midfielders of that ilk, that's how they help you.
Are you telling me if you're going out there with Matic and Pogba in front of you, you might have been thinking,
Well, it is a problem. Harry Maguire is probably a classic example of that. As good a footballer as he is, I mean, he's immobile, he's not the most athletic, he's not the quickest over the ground, so he actually needs to be protected as well to a certain extent, and in particular by those central midfielders in front of him.
Richie McCormack, you got a few words in edgeways there. Well done.
Managed it just about. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Kenny Cunningham is staying with us for the evening. Here's your chance to win money.
Your chance to win big. News Talk's Cash Machine.
We had another non-winner in the cash machine today. So there was €6,937.14 in the cash machine when we called the person just after 3 o'clock. They didn't answer, which means all that money rolls over until tomorrow when you'll have the chance to win again. So tune in to News Talk Breakfast from 8 o'clock to find how much is up for grabs. We are going to take a short break. Kenny's staying with us. We have Rugby After 8. We're talking Henry Shefflin and Galway next.
The News Round on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.